Yes, and he
this is live, but not live radio. Thank you all for PBS.
Formulating essential oil formulas,
yeah.
Which and he was one of the people, maybe the only person, I don't know, but one of the people that helped Gary Young start his company called Young Living Oils, which is a multi-million dollar, multi-level company, which many alternative health practitioners use his products. He was also one of the founders of the Holistic Medical Association, okay? And Terry Brown and I were sitting in the lunchroom last weekend at this event in Sedona. And Terry Friedman was across from us with this beautiful young lady, and he started saying some things. And I started jumping in and saying, wait a second, I didn't know who he was. I said, I'm an expert on those things. I think I was a little brash, but somehow we ended up having a really good conversation, and he came to my talk, and then he gave us two books that he wrote, and one of them was The Man Who Walked with Jesus, Tales from the Sixth Disciple. That was Matthew. And on the back of the book, there were some comments on the book. From one of them was from Gladys Magari, who was the wife of Dr. Magari, who was the most renowned Edgar Cayce doctor, I believe, in the country. Dr. William, was he William Magari? Is that his first name, William?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, in Phoenix. And years ago, this was years ago, Terry and I were selling multi-level marketing vitamins, a product called Cernatine, and we actually came to Phoenix two times, and they used to do a show every year. Do you remember that?
Yes,
and we were there, and we had a table there. And, of course, I was very much into Edgar Cayce. I was excited to go to this show, and it was really exciting to meet Dr. Friedman at this event. And this is an incredible story because he believes he was Matthew, okay? The Gospel according to Matthew. And I went on the internet earlier and looking for some quotes that were in the Gospel according to Matthew. And let me see here if I can see. Here we go. Yes, judge not lest ye shall be judged. Your heart will always be where your treasure is. Now, Terry, that was actually you quoting Jesus, right? Those quotes, or were they from Matthew himself?
Absolutely.
Is that what?
Said to me, you're just quoting me, and you're nothing but a scribe. I said, that's all right. I love to be a scribe.
Uh-huh. So you were writing all those things down, and then you put them in the Gospel of Matthew. You know what? I tell people, we're not going to believe that Terry was Matthew. We don't believe anything. We don't believe anything. We look for resonance. So we're going to find out tonight his story of how he feels connected to Matthew. And if he was, he was responsible for bringing forth some of Jesus's greatest messages in the Gospel of Matthew. Am I right, Terry?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, as I was reading the book, I found out that you were a tax collector. And
that's correct.
And Jesus discovered you and said, give up everything and come with me. And you did it. Or Matthew did it. And is that in the Bible that Matthew was a tax collector?
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
Tell me, why don't we start out by having you share, like, how you made this connection to Matthew?
Sure, why not? I was a practicing physician for the last 30 years. I was a medical doctor located in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I must say my life has been very, very unique in that I've had many unique experiences and I've got an opportunity to go to many, many countries and do a lot of traveling as well. So I've had a very rare chance to be, might say, educated, just as Yeshua, they call him Yeshua, because we all spoke Aramaic at that time. We did not speak Hebrew or any other language. We basically spoke a tongue that is almost unknown now. It's called Aramaic. And basically, having done this, I decided that being an author is much more fun than practicing medicine all day long. So when I received a calling from him in 1995, he appeared to me and asked me if I would write a book about the true life that he expressed 2,000 years ago. Now, I've always been a Christian, and in fact, I'm an elder in the church, and Presbyterian, as a matter of fact, and but never, I felt very connected to him, but still, I had no knowledge how deep this connection went. But when he appeared to me in 1995 and asked me to write a book about his life, I said, well, I'm very honored and humble about your request. However, I must say I don't know anything about your life except what I've read in the New Testament. He promptly said, you will remember. He said, on top of that, I will download while you sleep my whole life before your eyes, and you're asked by me to please write this down. I said, well, then I'm just a scribe. He said, that's correct. He said, that's a big job. I said, I agree. I shall take on the task. But at that time, I still had a medical practice in Scottsdale, Arizona, so things went very slow. So after I retired in 97...
Excuse me, Kelly, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
And that is, when you had this vision of Jesus,
yeah,
can you share, like, was it a voice in your head? Did you see? Do you have a vision of seeing him? How were you sure that it was actually Jesus, you were?
You know, even though I'm analytical in my daily life, I still let my heart lead me. And I knew immediately, nobody had to tell me. I knew I had a feeling. I heard him. He was talking to me, just like you're talking to me now, when he's talking to me quite loudly. And this hasn't been the first time either. I've had that when I went to Egypt in 92. However, he spoke to me very clearly and distinctly, that you will remember. You will remember. And I had not the time at that time to complete the book. So it took me 7 years to write this book about his life. And he, during that time, I spoke to him frequently. He would call me Matai. I said, where does that come from? He said, that's the Aramaic name of Matthew. So he constantly said to me, you were Matai, period. I said, yeah, I might have been asked, but I don't think I was really him. Yes, you were him. So I accepted his words and wrote this book about, from my perspective, is Matthai. And as I said, the sixth disciple, and I remembered meeting him when him and five disciples came to a small town by Nazareth. They came into the roadway there, and I immediately caught my attention. So I began to get close to him and learn more about him. But I indeed was a tax collector. And I was very much had a Roman heart. I liked the way the Romans lived. They had a very, very well-educated and a very, you might say, view of a lot of countries. They would conquer the countries and then bring back much of the culture that they had learned from those countries. So I kind of put myself on their side and spent a lot of my time in Rome. However, once he asked me to join him, my whole life changed. So the book got really going when I retired in 1997 from my medical practice. I could devote to full-time by creating this book. I must say that a big part of that was having purchased a beautiful cottage in the city up there in northern city of Colorado, where I moved after I retired. And there, by the creek, I had my days cut out for me. During the night, the information was downloaded to me. In the morning, I would get up and write for hours and then walk in the national forest up there. It's the beautiful mountains of Colorado.
What city in Colorado?
That was in the city of, oh, God, I'm losing my thought now. Sorry. I'll tell you in a minute. Anyway.
But don't worry about it. It's not important.
Estes Park. It's called
Estes Park.
Park, P-A-R-K. It's a resort city up there. And we bought a wonderful house there along the river near downtown Estes Park. And I used to spend weeks on end up there. Essentially by myself, creating this book.
Now, when you got the downloads from Jesus, did it wake up memories in you? Like, did you say, yes, I know that?
Little by little it did.
Mm-hmm.
But the major thing that woke up my memories was actually writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
The first chapter is devoted to my first meeting of Yeshua.
Mm-hmm.
Five motley crew. And, of course, I consider myself more sophisticated and worldly, having spent most of my time in Rome, but coming back to this town of Nazareth and collecting taxes and so forth. But I was very much aligned with the Roman concepts, Roman ideas, and consider myself one of the better educated of the disciples.
Now, Jesus did this with all his disciples. He would just walk up to them and said, you're supposed to come with me, right? And then they just went along, right?
Well, some did, some was hesitant at first, but eventually joined the crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't spontaneous for everyone. I think it was one of my brothers, Thomas, who said something like, "Well, I've got to go bury my parents," or whatever it was, and Yeshua said something to the effect, "Let the dead bury the dead. come with me now.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that was striking when I started thumbing through your book, and by the way, it's called The Man Who Walked with Jesus. Is it available on Amazon, Terry?
Yes, it is. It's available on Amazon. It's also available in my website, which is Dr. Friedman, EssentialOils.com. Now, my last name is spelled F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N-N, two N's in that, but that's it, Dr. Friedman, EssentialOils.com.
Okay.
So you either go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble has some of my books, but not all of them, but that one I know is in Amazon, and you can get it on my website.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed to me as I was thumbing through your book that Jesus kind of liked to party.
He did.
Right?
He's a very lighthearted guy. He performed yoga every day, loved yoga, and he ate very, very smartly and very healthily and tried to get us to join him. And, of course, we were on the road a lot with him, so we basically ate what he ate.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very light-hearted man and a very human man, I must say.
Mm-hmm. And you were there when he turned water into wine, right?
I hadn't joined yet. No, I didn't see that part.
You didn't
of his
see
life.
That.
But he was dancing pretty wildly there, and then at the wedding party, and then the master was putting on the wedding party. Actually said, we're running low on land, on wine. We've got many more guests than we participated. And actually, it was his mother, Mary, that asked him, please, son, turn this water into wine. So we did. It was the top quality wine, too. I'm not necessarily a wine connoisseur, but I do like wine, and I think that... my understanding is it was good grade of wine.
When I was reading your book, it sounds like he didn't do it to show off or to do a miracle. It's because they needed wine, right?
In fact, he was reluctant to reveal himself.
Yeah.
It was his mother that pushed him.
Mm-hmm. How about, were you there for any of the other miracles that happened?
Almost everyone after that. That was on the very early time of his life on this earth. And but for the rest of the time, I was pretty much involved.
Mm-hmm. What is it, do you think, that Jesus, about Jesus that no one knows about, that you have some memory of, that would be neat for people to hear?
I think you hit it on the nail there, that he was really a guy who loved life, who played tricks on dear mother, and he was a little bit of a... And by the way, he never liked carpentry, never got involved in carpentry. It's mentioned in the Bible, mentioned somewhere, and it's believed by many Christians that... He was a real carpenter. He never liked carpentry. He just didn't feel drawn to it. He thought his work was higher than that, in the sense of spiritually message he had to bring to the world. So it was his brother John who worked with his father in the carpenter shop. The other thing was, Jesus was not poor. His great-uncle was Joseph Arimathea. And Joseph Arimathea was a wealthy, wealthy trader who sailed his ships around the ocean and to India, to England, Scotland, in fact, to the United States, and traded with all types of people. And he got to know a lot of these countries quite well. In fact, the big thing was when Jesus reached 12 years of age, he went with his uncle, Joseph Arimathea, and became a deckhand and learned to be a man and a sailor all at once, but learned along the line about people throughout the world that was known at that time, which included, as they say, India. He learned many things from going to India, as well as going to Tintagel in northern England, going to visit the native Indians in Mexico at that time. So a lot of these things he had found out from the wonderful education that could only be given to him by his wealthy uncle. So he wasn't poor by any means, but he left a very, was in a very humble life and never was much for luxuries.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when Jesus and his disciples were tromping around, was Joseph of Arimathea footing the bills? Or were, you know, like they obviously had to eat and sleep somewhere. Were people taking care of them, or were they staying in the motels of the time?
No, a lot of times we slept out under a tree outside. And don't forget, this part of Israel was very good climate. We occasionally saw snow, but that was pretty rare. It was only at the higher altitudes. But mostly people were very kindly and accepted us and took us in and fed us and things like that. If not, we did with what we had. Dried fish. We were around the Sea of Galilee for quite a long time, which we were able to get abundant fish from that area.
Mm-hmm. You know, I should see if Terry, you know, the work that we're doing has a connection to Jesus. And part of the connection is that we believe, I mean, there's a huge amount of evidence to this. I don't know if you looked at it, but that Terry was... Are you familiar with St. Catherine of Siena?
I heard of her, yes. I'm not that familiar with it, but I have heard of her, yes. Absolutely.
Here's the story. St. Catherine was a young woman in Siena, Italy, and she would go into the local church, and they would write down everything she said because they thought God was speaking to them through her.
Yeah.
And apparently she was talking to Jesus because Jesus said, "You're now my..." Well, maybe, Terry, you want to share that part? Hello, Terry, are you on mute?
Let's see. Can you hear me?
I hear you.
Okay. Well, I remember... This is what I remember. I remember the feeling of being married and having the feeling of a wedding ring, and that I was married to Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. And that's where I made my commitments, rather than in a worldly marriage. I thought that I was married to Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. I have other memories of that life too. And the thing with memories, as you have mentioned, like as you wrote the book, you remembered more and more. The thing that I found is that I remember more and more as time goes by.
Yes. Not only that, before I published this book in 2002, I decided to go on a trip to Israel and see for myself the places that we had visited and see what it's like today. And I did do that, and that brought things to a real foundation or meaning to me, because I saw things as they are today, and then I remembered more things of how they were before, what I actually saw. Peter's house and so on and so forth, which is said to still be standing. So when I saw those things and sailed on the Sea of Galilee, it opened up a lot to me. And my memory came back a lot quicker at that time. So right before I finished the book, I did include that as the final chapter. So that really made a big difference and to bring everything to me at that time. Meeting some herdsmen who spoke, who lived in spoke Aramaic, and lived in the tents of skins of animals, and went around the villages, went throughout the country feeding their animals. This also helped me gain a lot of knowledge about the language and much of my work at that time, or play, if you want to look at Jesus. We were more serious than he was, I think. He had his hands full teaching these 12 dumb guys about life, I think, and what it was all about, because we were certainly going against the grain when we began to discuss these things.
Now, I remember when he brought Judas on, you weren't too pleased with Judas, were you?
No, he's kind of an outsider, because most of us were from around northern Israel. We were from, you know, from the cities there, Nazareth or whatever. But Judas was brought in from Jerusalem, and he had a different agenda. God love him, he had one of the toughest jobs there. I say that because his idea was, hey, we can challenge Jesus here publicly, and he'll stand up and break through the bars of the prison and show that he is stronger than anything. Well, we can chase the Romans out of our country. We're now occupying the state of Israel. So this was his belief, and he was very, very defined on that belief that that was the way things were. But he was only one of the 12 of us, and we all had slightly different perspective on things. As I said myself, I was kind of aligned with the Roman Empire. So that didn't interest me at all, what his ideas were.
I've heard this story before about Judas, because normally it's historically, he's thought of the guy that betrayed Jesus for silver. But in fact, I've heard two other stories. One was that he wanted to put Jesus on the line so Jesus would stand up in it and the whole world would recognize him, which is what you're saying. And the other was that Jesus, in fact, wanted this to happen because it was a way that he would reach people, you know?
Yes. Well, that is unique about him, that he was crucified, ascended, and quite different than the other. Because, you know, death by the cross was quite common in that day. It wasn't just the three people on the hill overlooking Jerusalem. A lot of people were crucified. If they try to challenge the conquerors, the Romans, they were put to death in a very painful way, hung on the cross. So being on the cross is not particularly fun, but it certainly wasn't uncommon. And Jesus kept telling me today, he said, whatever you do, take me down from that cross. I don't want to be up there. I don't want to be known as the guy on the cross. I want to be known for the message I brought to the world, which is we are all one. We are all children of God. And that's the important thing. Not the message that he died on the cross to save our sins. He didn't know. I didn't say save your sins. I'm not your sin saver. I'm your servant. He told me that many times. I am your servant. I'm not here to save you from yourself or things you do. You have to deal with that. I'm here as your servant to help you see things more clearly.
Well,
that's beautiful.
Jay, are you coming up with any questions? Well, you were there after he was on the cross, and
yeah.
Then you were there after he appeared resurrected. Am I right?
That's correct. And it took him about 6 days, 5 to 6 days to ascend completely. He was put in the tomb of his great uncle Joseph of Arimathea had saved that tomb, and he was placed in there. And then obviously he came down out of that tomb. He had the shroud still around him. The Shroud of Turin is actual, the factual shroud that he wore, and eventually that truth will be brought out. Right now there's some controversy of the people that have control of that shroud. And by the way, there's two pieces. There's the facial shroud, and then there's the body shroud. So he basically claimed to me, that is my correct shroud. And you'll find, when your analysis gets improved, you'll find evidence of the frankincense oil still on that shroud that he was prepared at death with by the Marys.
Mm-hmm.
Mother Mary and his twin flame, Mary Magdalene. Or Mary Magdalena.
You know, I'm just going to tell everybody, if you're not aware of it, the Shroud of Turin actually exists right now, and that there's a image on it of Jesus that's kind of burned into the shroud, and this controversy about, this is what Terry was talking about, whether that's actually Jesus or somebody faked it or something like that. But you can look it up, Shroud of Turin, and read about it. And Terry, who were your favorite disciples? Who were your friends?
Oh, golly!
Or Matthew's friends?
Yeah, Matthew. Oh, well, actually, surprisingly enough, I didn't manage to make friends with Judas. One thing about him. He was a little anti-Roman, but I learned that he was very educated, one of the most educated of myself, and I did like him quite a bit. Thomas was a good friend of mine, and still is.
You know him this lifetime?
Yeah, but he came in a female body this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good friend of mine then. And as groups, we stuck together, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Which often happens. We kind of come back together.
How about John the Beloved?
Honestly, because he was homosexual, we didn't like his feminine ways. In fact, on the painting of the Last Supper, he's sitting next to Yeshua. He looks very feminine. He was very feminine, but he's really a good guy. And Mary was introduced to him by Jesus when he was on the cross, saying, Mother, behold your son. Son, behold your mother. He knew that he could trust John. So what he did, he took, when things got tough after his crucifixion, he took her to Turkey and went to the city of Ephesus in Turkey and got a place for her on the mountaintop overlooking Ephesus. Ephesus used to be a Roman city in Turkey at seacoast that was eventually silted in and is abandoned now today. But they're finding lots of interesting things in their library there, and they've only about 3 to 5% uncovered by archaeological digs, but it's a very marvelous finding of this lifetime when a lot of people respected Ephesus. But he put her in a mountaintop retreat above Ephesus, looking down over Ephesus, so she could go down when she needed supplies. And that's where she was the last 8 years of her life.
So John the Beloved was gay. That's not in the Bible, is it?
No, none of us put him there. But he did, and I will say this, he did not practice. He did not practice this. He was, mm-hmm. he was really, he was committed to Yeshua's, you know, his needing to get the word out, the message out through the healing. When we went around the country doing our healing, doing our work in the villages, where we were generally well received by the people at that time, but we also had at times a very large entourage with us of people who were looking after us and making sure we had everything right and everything was cooked properly and just the way that Yeshua liked it. And the times we did not spend in the house at night, we had the company of all these wonderful people who followed us wherever we went.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a story that years ago, I had a teacher that I was very influenced by. I would say he was the best, you know, at one period of my life, I was going to yogis and masters and gurus and reading everything. And this one guy was awesome. He would give a talk, and I could feel the energy land in the room. And I could feel my depressions going away. I could feel there was something in his presence. And I think I had that experience with him. And, in recent times, I show up and do things, and people feel similar energy as I felt around this guy. Yeah. And he was like a role model. And he used to say that he was John the Beloved, okay? And I used to think maybe he was because of his ability to bring in this wonderful energy into the space. Yeah. And probably about 12 years into his work, 12 or 15, I don't remember, he got into deep doo-doo because it came out that he was having relationships with the four guys that were his assistants. Huh. And they all got mad at him.
Yeah.
And so it's very interesting that you said John the Beloved was gay. It was really interesting because I don't think anyone really, well, there are people, if you look at the internet, there's people that mention it. And then some people say they thought that Jesus was having a connection with John the Beloved. But nonetheless, that this guy was awesome in his ability to transmute spirit and bring it into the room. I don't want to say who he is because I don't want to. His work got very damaged because of this gay thing that came out, and a lot of people left him because of it. And but it's very interesting that you mentioned that.
Well, we kind of made fun of John because he was kind of naive, and you know, but he would do anything he could to help Jesus in his work, so forth. So there was nothing mm-hmm. he wouldn't do. So he was really mm-hmm. very faithful.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have about 10 minutes left. We could go to 12 minutes. And there's two things I want to do in the next 12 minutes. First off, I want to make sure that we fit in, and thank you, Carolyn in Alaska, for reminding me. We didn't even do it Sunday because I wasn't even paying attention to the news, but do a prayer or an intention for the Philippines, for the 10,000 people supposedly died there, and I'm sure a lot of people are homeless at the moment. So we want to do a prayer for them. And Terry, I hope you'll join us for that. But before we do that, let's just see if anyone's got a burning question for you. And I'll open the lines. Let's see how much noise we got here. Hang on.
I got a question.
Now, who is that? Is that Donald Herman?
Yep, it is. I was just curious about, you were talking about Jesus traveling, and you said he went to South America. Do you know, would he have met Mayans, or do you have any idea who he might have met with there?
No, it wasn't South America. It was more like Mexico. Mexico is considered North America, by the way. And yes, he met a lot of the Mayans and this group, and they were still doing sacrifices, even though Yeshua and Joseph really enjoyed the wonderful tropical breezes. I think when they were sitting on the beach, they tried to influence the heads of the Mayan group or the Aztec group. I think it was before the Aztec came about. The Aztec were a breakoff from the Mayans. They tried to tell them that God doesn't expect or doesn't even want, doesn't care for any of the sacrifice. That's wrong. Whether it be animal or man, it's wrong. Let's stop doing that. That was the message that Yeshua and Joseph Arimathea gave to these elders of the Mayan population who was at that time in southern Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's see if we got another question. Anyone else have a question out there?
I was just going to mention there's a great book if he wants more information about Jesus in Mexico. It's called He Walked the Americas by L. Taylor Hansen, and she spent all these times with the Native Americans in the area, and they told of all the stories about being visited by Jesus that had been passed on. It's a great book.
What's the title again, please?
He Walked the Americas.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Yes.
That's validation for Terry's story, too. Did someone else have a... Terry, you wanted to say something. Go ahead.
I just want to say that Jesus came back as a winged serpent. That's the way they define him. Serpent to the southern Mexican people meant wisdom. And wings showed that he could go up and down at will into the sky. So they try to call him Quetzalcoatl, which was a name for the winged serpent. They talked about mm-hmm. it today in their culture. That is correct.
Terry, is Jesus still ever talking to you?
Yes, occasionally he does. Didn't seem to be as committed as when I was writing the book, but he still talks to me, just as a lot of his close allies do. And then the enlightened form that they now exist.
Tell him if he ever wants to say hello to our group, we would love it. Okay?
I shall, yes, I shall.
And let's see if we have another question. Anyone else have a question there?
I do. Was Jesus a vegetarian?
Was
Was Jesus a Sagittarian? Is that
no,
the
a vegetarian.
Oh, was he a vegetarian?
Yeah.
We had great discussions about that. Because some of us were vegetarians and others were not. So he said, that's up to the source, to you guys. Whatever you want to do, whatever you feel right about, you can be a vegetarian or not. It's okay, because we indeed rule the animals of our planet. However, we've got to respect them and be kind to them. So he said, vegetarianism, we ate fish, things of that nature. So none of us were, I think most of us were not vegetarian, but we were people that enjoyed the typical meal, yogurt and things of this nature at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The buns and beans, mixed stuff, we ate that a lot. And then I say we ate the fish, so that's what we ate.
Let's see if we got another question out there.
Yes.
Let's go.
Yes.
I have a question.
Okay, well, wait a second. I'm going to take the person who said yes, they were first. Go ahead.
Yes. Gary?
Yeah.
Were you the one that came up with Steve's oil originally?
Well, I the one to come up with essential oils.
Yeah, the Steve's oil.
No, I'm not that I'm aware of, although I was one of the first holistic medical doctors in this country, is Benjamin Rush. And I brought a lot of that God's natural healing pharmacy is our plants and our oils. And I've very much been promoting that in medicine, so I'm kind of a different doctor, even though I've treated many of the, you know, whatever works, I use it.
That's good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do we have another question? We think we got room for one more question.
Yes.
I heard that. That's somebody in Alberta, Canada. Is that somebody in Alberta?
Yes, it's Carola.
Okay, Carola.
Was Jesus married?
Absolutely he was. Mary Magdalene is his twin flame. And he's with her today. And then, do you know what a twin flame is? Twin flames are two souls that actually join to become one, and one is the mirror image of the other. So if I'm thinking, golly, we need to go to a show tonight, twin flame may say, I want to stay home and watch TV. So you deal with that and work out a relationship. But yeah, Mary Magdalene was his twin flame.
Now, was Jesus... was it his idea not to put that in the Bible?
Let me say one thing. They had a child, by the way. They had a child, and Mary Magdalene took the, after his death, the child, she was 7 months pregnant. The child was not born yet. When after his death, she went on with complaining that he left me and I'm pregnant, blah, blah, blah. But eventually, a beautiful female child was born by the name of Sarah, and she eventually took that child and went to France with that child and became part of the ruling energy there in France. Because they
Are you familiar with Lawrence Gardner?
No, I never heard of him.
Lawrence Gardner wrote a whole bunch of books about this.
Really?
I think the bloodline of the Holy Grail, talking about Jesus' bloodline continuing in Europe, okay? And he's quite well known, and his books had a lot of respect. So,
well, I must say, the word Holy Grail, I'm told by Yeshua that you can't find my cup today. It's not here, around here. So, if you're
right.
Looking about it.
All right. You know what? We are so honored to have you on sharing this. We have applause over the phone. So, listen, guys, let's give a round of applause to Terry Friedman for coming here. Let's go.
Yay!
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry.
Very interesting. Thank you. Will you come back?
If Wynn asks me to, I may do that.
Well, you know what? I think you have a lot to share with us, not only about the life of Jesus, but people that have health issues. I got a feeling you know a lot of things that work, and maybe sometime we'll do another session. We'll let people, ask Terry. We'll call it Ask Terry, and some of the people out there can, get help from some of your knowledge. Now, let me see.
I have one more question.
Listen, we're not going to take another. I'm sorry. Hang on. We're not going to take another question right now.
All right, Heisberg Live, I guess the recording stopped, although it's still playing. This was awesome. I just went several times into tears from happiness. Thank you, Uncle Terry. Thank you all for being here. And I'm going to mute the phone. Thank you, BBS, for having us.
All callers are unmuted.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great, Harry. That was great. Thank you.
Night. Thank you.
All right.
Great call.